This is Radio Shalom coming to you from Planet FM. Unfortunately, Joan, who has been taking this spot for over 30 years, is not able to be with us today. So this is Jules Getty filling in for Joan. And Joan, we wish you better. I have here in the studio with us Chris Harris, who is going to be talking to us about that great famous subject, the Holocaust. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you, Jules. It's nice to be here.
Thank you. First time on radio?
First time on radio.
He looks totally relaxed, and we're going to have a good chat. So, Chris, you're doing Holocaust studies or stuff for the last 2 years full-time?
Yes, full-time. So the centre actually approached me about 2 years ago asking me whether I'd like to take on the role as the National Director of Education. And I did that for a year contract, so I took a year off my teaching job. And about 6 months into it, they asked me if I'd actually like to continue doing it. And since then, it's been pretty much history of being able to take on this role. So I love it. It's a passion of mine, and I love my role of actually being able to go out to schools and universities and community groups and educate people on the Holocaust, but also the lessons from the Holocaust as well.
Fantastic. Before that, you were teaching full-time.
I was at Onehunga High School for 12 years.
Onehunga.
Yeah.
And the Holocaust Centre, that's actually based in Wellington.
It is based in Wellington, so that's where the physical premises is. But I'm actually based in Auckland when I'm actually at home. A lot of the time I'm actually on the road throughout the whole country speaking to students and speaking to community groups.
Fantastic. Do you get a good reception where you go, wherever you go?
Very much so. It's absolutely amazing in regards to what our teachers are actually doing out there. Of course, there's still a lot more work to do. We would actually like to really see a lot of the lessons from the Holocaust actually incorporated into the school curriculum. And we'd also like to see that the Holocaust actually really does have a good, solid platform within the schooling, whether it's in Year 9 or Year 10. We're seeing it a lot in regards to our senior students, but we're not seeing it really in our junior students.
That's actually giving effect to what we are obliged to do. And I'm just going to read to you the very first part, which comes from the Bible, Deuteronomy. And it says, remember what the Amalekites did to you along the way when you came out of Egypt, when you were weary and worn out. They met you on your journey and attacked you, all who were lagging behind. They had no fear of God. When the Lord your God gives you rest from all the enemies around you in the land he is giving you to possess as an inheritance, you shall blot out the name of Amalek and from under heaven. Do not forget. That's Deuteronomy. Do not forget. And that's what we're doing now.
Definitely.
That's what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, for us, that what we're saying to the students is that we have to face reality, is that it mean that within 20 years, we're probably not going to actually see a Holocaust survivor alive. And, I mean, that's actually a real concern, because if students are going to forget about this in the past, from the past, then it's going to just fade into memory. But we want to actually continue that memory and actually say, look, we cannot actually forget what's actually happened. We need to actually take those lessons and adapt them to the world that we're living in today.
And that's happening?
It is. It's great to see that. I mean, that some kids are actually saying, look, I want to actually be able to carry this on for my next generation after me as well. We're seeing parents actually contact us after we've gone in and done talks and say, my child came home, wasn't passionate about the subject at all, but now is actually coming home and actually talking about the Holocaust, sharing those lessons with us and being able to take it forward.
And are the younger generation doing or getting involved in studies of the Holocaust in a sad way or in an educational way, or how do they take it?
I think they take it more in the educational way. I mean, that what we try to emphasise is that, I mean, that the story is actually the most important thing. It's the individual. And it's experience that that individual actually had, whether they survived or not, does matter. But it's actually what they actually went through. So being able to look at diary entries, being able to look at letters, being able to understand that, I mean, that putting a name and a face to somebody is far more important than showing the shock and awe, which, I mean, that some teachers have still continued to do. but some teachers actually don't do either as well, is getting away from that pile of bodies and actually really, really giving them a name and a face.
Yeah.
And I think that that's vital for us in regards to it, because there's no point in traumatizing a young person. They can actually be able to read for themselves, they can interpret for themselves about what went on, but they might not necessarily know in regards to, hey, this person was exactly like me and had the same experiences, that liked to hang out with their friends, liked to go to the shops, play sport, had the same family structure as me. And I think that's really, really vital for them to actually understand that.
Do you accomplish it yourself or via teachers?
We do actually both. So, I mean, I'll go out and do talks, but I mean that we also, every 2 years, we sponsor up to 30 teachers to go to Yad Vashem. And I think that's really our jewel in our crown in regards to our centre. And to date, we've actually educated over 60 teachers.
That have actually
60, yeah. And we're just about to send another 30 teachers in January as well. And, I mean, that they're exposed to, I mean, they're probably the greatest minds in regards to the Holocaust. And they learn from survivors, but they learn also in regards to cross-curricular, everything from art to English to media on what's the good movies to be able to show your classes. But they also get to experience Israel as well and actually see how the message of the Holocaust is actually then transferred throughout the whole of Israel, but also being able to put those historical elements into the contemporary elements as well.
You know, I was involved in the launch of the Yad Vashem project. I think they were 15, then the initial was 15, and they went to Israel, and they came back, and they gave us a report back, and it just felt to me like a lot of them, it was a life-changing experience for them. But more important is that they really took on board what had happened, the magnitude of it, and then they wanted to impart that experience to others, and that's what's happening. I'm so happy to hear that now there's 30 going this year. That's amazing.
It is, and that's the thing that's happening. That, as you said, I mean, way back in 2013, we had those 15 teachers. I mean, 2015, I mean, when I went, I mean, there was 26 of us that went, and I would say that single-handedly out of any professional development I've ever done, it doesn't even, you know, they don't even get to the same as what my experience was in Israel. And, I mean, I was lucky enough to lead the group in 2017, and through the good graces of everything, that I managed to actually be on that plane in 2019 as well, that I'll be travelling over with them. And, you know, I mean, we've gone from having about 20 people apply for this to recently we just had 164 applicants.
Wow.
So
all over the country.
All over the country, from the smallest of places all the way through to our big cities. And, I mean, for us, I mean, that's so empowering. I mean, we can go back to those teachers who are unsuccessful and say, would you be interested in regards to, I don't know, volunteering for the centre? Would you like to be involved in some of the professional development that we're offering? And, I mean, we think about it, that, I mean, that for every teacher, I mean, probably actually reaches about 150 students directly themselves. I mean, we're now looking into the thousands of children that are actually getting influenced by these teachers.
Woohoo! I'm a numbers man. And when this was first debated, and I spoke to Inga, and I did exactly that. I said, well, I actually said each teacher will influence maybe 100 people. And then I started doing the arithmetic, and it ran into thousands. And I said, woohoo! It is great.
And the thing is that, I mean, that we see about 3,000 students annually come through the centre. But, I mean, even when I'm on my outreach, I probably, excuse me, probably reach about 3,500 students a year. So, I mean, the demand is there, and they love it, because we've done talks in regards to, I mean, a prime example would be like Somerville Intermediate out in Howick, where we had 900 students actually listen to us for that day.
Wow.
And, I mean, you can't imagine in regards to, here's some 11 and 12-year-olds sitting there for 3 hours for somebody talking about the Holocaust, and they didn't move. They were captivated all the way through it, because it's real for them. And we live in a world now where we actually get instant gratification. We can actually just Google anything. But when somebody actually tells you something about history and tells you about that makes it real for you, or shares a story from someone that's actually been a survivor sharing a story with them, that just carries on. And I mean, I know when I've got my students, my old students who have, you know, I had for 12 years who have gone through university have come to me and said, what we learnt that year has single-handedly changed everything in regards to what I've done with my life.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So, Chris, let's start at the beginning.
Sure.
How did you, what motivated you to get involved and take us on this journey?
Okay. So, well, I mean, growing up, I mean, my mum had always actually told us about our sort of Jewish heritage. She'd always talked about Poland and where her family was from. Yeah. And so we sort of learned a little bit in that way, but it was still very, very elementary in regards to it. But I'd been brought up on Holocaust film. My parents also showed me movies like The Boys from Brazil. So yeah. Nazi hunting was always something that was always actually talked about at home. And then I, of course, naturally fell in love with history. When you've sort of got it ingrained in your grad, having a mother that was so passionate about the subject. Mm-hmm. And I just ended up following it through high school, through university, and started sort of looking at the Holocaust and going, look, what lessons can we actually learn from this? I went away and started working with people with disabilities for a number of years. Mm-hmm. And came back and thought, well, I've got the maturity now, I think, that I can actually handle teaching. And I came back and retrained as a teacher, and I've been pretty much had a Holocaust education within my classes ever since. And in 2014, I was lucky enough to actually listen to Stephen Feinberg, who was the head of the USHMM at that stage. And he was talking all about the Holocaust. And then all of a sudden, Carol Cocoon, who was actually there in the Holocaust Centre, was talking about these trips to Israel. And I thought, oh, well, I'll put my application in and see what happens. And I was lucky enough to be accepted and went on that and came back. And I sort of said, you know, Auckland actually needs a presence on the Holocaust Centre.
Right.
And people said, well, why is that? And I said, well, you're very, very Wellington focused. Let's actually have a look at Auckland. And I listened to the AGM, in which one of my good friends was actually at the AGM and voluntold me onto the board.
That's normal.
Yes, I was listening and all of a sudden went dark, and then I came back and I found out I was on the board. With him having a big smile on his face, I continue to harass him to this day. And then we employed a National Director of Education for a year. Things just didn't go as well as we hoped. So I was asked then to actually take on the role. And yeah, as I said earlier, it's been a love and a passion of mine, and I feed so much in regards to from the knowledge but also the people that are around me, because when you're actually dealing with Holocaust survivors who are truly special people, but also I mean that the generations that follow them as well and their sharing of their stories, I mean, makes my life so much easier, and I wake up every day saying this is what I was meant to be here for.
Fantastic. That's really good.
Yeah. So
I had an experience many years ago. I got divorced and I was really in bad shape. I was traumatized. I mean, lots of people get divorced, but I got divorced. So for me, it was just me. And then I became kind of mechanical, emotionless. And I was just doing things that I had to do. And then I read a book called For Those I Loved, Martin Gray. And I read it through the night. And got out of bed in the morning, and I went and looked at myself in the mirror, and I said, you are such a silly man. Look what this man went through. He was a survivor of the Holocaust.
Yeah.
Have you read that book?
No, I haven't.
Well, just briefly, he was 17 years old when we had the Warsaw Ghetto, and his mother and brother and sister were killed in Treblinka. His father died in the uprising in 1943, I think, and he went to Treblinka and he escaped from Treblinka.
Wow.
And then he joined the Polish resistance, and then he joined the Red Army, and they conquered Germany, and all he had in mind was to kill. And when it came to conquering, when they arrived in Berlin, he couldn't. He defected to the West. He started a business in the West. He had one sole surviving relative, his aunt. And then he met a girl from France, married her, went to live in the south of France, established a vineyard. They had four kids. And when the oldest kid was 12, 13, there was a forest fire, and the wife and four kids died in the forest fire.
Oh, my goodness.
And he packs it up in France, and he goes to live in Israel. And he starts the Martin Gray Foundation, and he does charity work, and he writes books. And I thought, look at this. This man lost his entire family twice, not just divorced, killed. Yeah. And he starts again. And I looked at myself, and I said, you really are being silly. And I started my life again.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Overnight.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that, I mean, that I think what we're trying to emphasize now, that I mean, that going forward, is that we've created a social media campaign around the idea of, actually, it's called hashtag Upstander. Yeah. And it's with a capital U, so it's about you. And it's actually about, what are you actually doing to actually stand up against prejudice, discrimination and bullying in New Zealand? And I think that that's really, really important, because we see the large number of mental health issues that are actually happening in New Zealand. We see our youth suicide rate, which just is absolutely disgraceful as a nation to be able to actually claim something like this. And so what we're trying to do is actually launch this campaign and say to young people, or anybody in reality, is that go on into Instagram. Have a picture which actually says hashtag Upstander on it, and tell us your story. Tell us in regards to something that you've actually done that, I mean, that has actually stood up to that prejudice, discrimination and apathy and bullying that actually exists. Because, you know, I mean, that if we look at Nazi Germany, for example, it was actually the minority that actually carried out these acts. It wasn't the majority, but it was the majority that stood by and actually allowed it to happen.
That's the problem.
Yeah, and let's try and actually say, let's become that upstander rather than the bystander. Because if we see a world that, I mean, that right now, that, I mean, that doesn't trust itself. And we see, you know, young people that are seeing leaders in high positions that are actually thinking it's okay to bully and actually be discriminatory against others. Mm. And if we're seeing young people actually seeing that, well, they're going to think that it's okay to do that. Which we now full well know that that's not the way that we conduct ourselves. And so what we've actually done is that we've created that, but then we've also tied it into a human rights speaker series as well.
Right.
And so we had our Children's Holocaust Memorial unveiled, which was a couple of weeks ago down in Wellington at the National Library. And that was a million and a half buttons that were actually collected from the Mariah School.
Million and a half.
And I mean, they weigh 980 kilos. I mean, it's just, you can't fathom it until you actually see it, that, I mean, that each one of these buttons is unique but also represents a child. And for us, that, I mean, that what we want to be able to do is say, look, here's the lessons that you can actually take from this. But also with the Human Rights Speaker Series, is that, I mean, that we're live streaming it on Facebook. So it doesn't matter where you are in the world, that you can actually be watching this. And it's a series of great topics that, I mean, that we actually have. So we've just actually had our first one this week, which was a great success, where we had Inga Wolf, the director of the Holocaust Centre, talk about her refugee experience. Uh-huh. And then we had a young man who was actually from Eritrea, who was actually talking about his experience of actually a refugee in the last few years. So it's not just an historical thing. It's actually creating that contemporary issues that are out there. Then we're actually looking at our second one, which will be on the 20th of February. And I'll put in a plug for it, that, I mean, it's from 6 till 7.30. And it's actually called Challenge in Regards to Discrimination and Prejudice. What does it mean to actually stand up? So we're getting leading experts that are going to be talking about, like, what does it actually mean to stand up? How do you actually stand up? How do you make yourself safe when you actually stand up? Because the last thing we want to do is actually encourage all these young people to stand up against prejudice and discrimination, but they're also putting themselves in harm's way at the same time. So it's doing it the right way. Our next one's going to be on the 13th of March, where we're looking at disability rights. We were looking at both the historical and the contemporary views of historic and disability rights. So I'm going to be discussing in regards to the what the Nazis would call the euthanasia program during the 1930s, a word that I refused to mostly use because it doesn't make any sense in regards to what they were doing.
They killed hundreds of thousands under that banner.
They did, and that's the thing is that, I mean, that's something that I hate, and then I'd rather just call it the T4 program for the name that they actually also gave it as well.
T4.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it was a disguise. The Nazis were very good at using code words. So this was one of the key words that they actually used. But then we're also going through to what is it actually to have a disability living in New Zealand now?
Yeah.
And so have we actually changed? Have our attitudes actually changed? How do we actually accommodate? Do we actually see that the world is actually focused on disability issues, or are we just still sweeping it under the carpet?
And are we?
I think in some way we are. I think that, I mean, that for myself, working with people with disabilities, that, I mean, that some employers out there still see a person with a disability and see that they've got a target on their head and they're not going to be the person that they're looking for. When in reality, that, I mean, that if we look at a lot of people who have disabilities will not take time off work, will be a lot more conscientious and a lot more hardworking. So that tells us something, that, I mean, that the statistics tell us that. So why are we actually feeling that we still have this fear of people with disabilities?
You know, I come from South Africa, and here in New Zealand, I found that people do spend more time on human rights. They do spend more time on disabilities. And I was so impressed one day. I'm sure it's just a normal thing, but I was standing next to a bus, and the bus stopped. The doors opened, and the platform, which is normally one step up, was dropped down by the driver, and a person who had a disability got onto the bus. And I was so impressed. I actually had tears in my eyes.
It's fantastic, isn't it? That, I mean, that we're starting to see our public transport to do that. I mean, I remember many years ago actually looking at the city of Vancouver and actually seeing those buses actually operate like that. Yeah. And I was like, wonder if we'll actually get those one day. And it's nice to see that. I mean, that we've got actually having that discussion that we're seeing people like that. So, I mean, that the social justice series is actually a really, really important thing for us because we did trial it pretty much this year with some of our key speakers around Paul Moon. We also had the former Human Rights Commissioner from Australia as well. So she came over and actually spoke. But we really, really want to be able to get out to people and actually say, look, why don't you come along? Actually have a great discussion, ask some questions of some key people that are actually out there. If you can't come in person to the National Library during those times, you can also do it via Facebook chat. And, you know, those questions can actually then be actually fed into us and we can answer them for you because, you know, with technology now that you don't always have to be in person to be able to answer these questions. And then our next one is that, I mean, that as an extension to that, we're looking also in June. In the last week of June, where we have Professor William Spurlin, who actually works at Brunel University, which is in London. And he's a strong advocate in regards to gay and lesbian rights. And he actually wrote a book called The Pink Triangle. And he talked about what it was like to be gay during the Holocaust. And he came here a number of years ago and had an outstanding sort of reception when he was here. So we've actually invited him back. And he's going to be doing some talks at AUT and also down in Wellington. But also he's going to be addressing some school students as well. But it's not just about the Holocaust he focuses on. So what? Again, he's another one that will talk about the Holocaust. We'll talk about the lessons from the Holocaust and the treatment of a group of people that, I mean, that not many people actually do talk about during that time. And then he's going to be then actually talking about how far we've actually come also. So we can see that, I mean, that what we're discussing is not just focused solely in regards to the Holocaust, but also the lessons that we take from the Holocaust. And I think that our Upstander campaign is going to be actually revolutionary. We're going to actually see a number of people. We've already actually seen people posting on their Instagram posts right now and sort of hashtag, you know, Upstander, hashtag HCNZ. So they're actually tagging us in, and we're actually seeing people say, look, hey, I'm just a normal person. I can actually share some of the things that, I mean, that have actually gone on in my life. And, I mean, even the other day I was at my hairdresser even talking about it, and she said to me, she said, I'll do it for you. So we went outside and she held the sign and she actually talked about, you know, equality for all. Yeah. And, I mean, that was really important. And then before you know it, the other two hairdressers actually jumped in and actually said, we'll actually do something as well. I've had my doctor do it. So, yeah, I mean, there's a number of people out there that are just, and what we want to do is just appeal to anybody. It doesn't matter. I mean, my 72-year-old mother has actually just recently done it, so I think that that's really cool. I mean, Diane, our board chair, her 92-year-old mother actually, deputy chair, 92-year-old mother actually ended up doing it as well, and she talked about what it was like to be discriminated against. So I think that that's really, really important that it's cross-generational, and it's something that we want to look at as having an upstander week next year.
Yeah.
And we can actually start saying to people that, look, this is what you need to be doing, and this is something that, I mean, that the more the majority actually does it, that minority will soon get squeezed even more, and we won't see that minority anymore.
I'm the co-president of B'nai B'rith, and I'm very happy to be taking this to B'nai B'rith.
Fantastic. Yeah. I'd love to, I mean, take the opportunity as well, if you need to, for me to come and speak to them about
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because, I mean, we're just trying to say, you know, it's the Holocaust, yes, directly affected. I mean, that 6 million Jews that were murdered, but also everybody else that actually survived. But there's actually more than that in regards to when we start looking at the other groups that were also affected. We also start seeing in regards to the people now that, I mean, that still have, whether it's from survivor guilt or whether it's second generations talking about their experiences of what their parents went through. And, I mean, we can branch these out into regards to what are actually our own race relations like in New Zealand. You know, I mean, so there's a lot of scope in regards to everything that we're looking at.
This is wonderful. There's an old saying that goes like this, history teaches us that history teaches us nothing. Well, I think you're giving the lie to that because you're using history to improve our lives now. And that's working.
Definitely. And that's the thing, is that I mean that history is not something in the past. And, you know, the great saying of, you know, that those who actually do not learn about the past are doomed to repeat it. And I think that that's really, really important, is that we cannot make those mistakes. We cannot let leaders actually stand up and actually preach hate, preach discrimination,
yeah,
and not act upon it. And I mean, this isn't just something that I mean that we're easy to blame countries where they have show people that actually stand up there and actually preach all of this. But what about within our own country? Let's actually start looking within first and actually start addressing our own issues before we actually start thinking about what other countries are doing.
Why not both?
Yeah. let's make it a global thing. I'd love to see it.
Something. New Zealand's a little country, but we definitely punch far above our weight.
Yeah.
On a lot of fronts. Let's do this on as well.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that we say to kids, look, I mean, seriously, that New Zealand stood up against the United States in regards to nuclear testing. And so I think that that's something that, I mean, that, hey, we've got a power that we can actually use.
That's fantastic. So, Chris, I do look forward to sharing more stuff with you, especially in B'nai B'rith. In the meantime, our time is up. And so, thank you for coming. Thank you for sharing this with us. We will talk more. And thank you to our sponsor, Nature Bee. Joan, good luck to you. Get well.
Yeah.
We'll see you soon.